First, let's talk about leaving the house. Let's say you live with a couple of roommates. You're vaccinated, so is your roommate. Great. But roommate three, not vaccinated yet, and he has diabetes. Can you go out and get a haircut, go to a crowded outdoor restaurant, visit your friends in Michigan, go on a European cruise? After a while, like after a year, living safely in a pandemic can start to feel like a super abstract math problem with no right answer. Well, our next guest is here to help. She's written an interactive guide on how to figure out what your household's COVID risk is and what level of risk you're okay with. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. People who live with people, we want to hear from you. What's been the most challenging thing over the past year for you when it comes to COVID safety? How have you problem solved with the people you live with over the last year? How are things changing with vaccination? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Tara Haley is a science and health journalist. She's the author of books including Vaccination Investigation, The History and Science of Vaccines. She wrote this interactive piece on COVID risk for the New York Times. Tara, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
Well, I know in my head over this last year, Tara, a lot of the time, and I think I'm like a lot of people, I'm asking the questions, is this safe, thinking there's a yes or no answer. As your piece demonstrates, it's not that simple. It's a more risky, less risky. Could you tell us how to get into that mindset?
Yeah, there's actually kind of a joke about epidemiologists. The motto of epidemiologists is, it depends. And I don't think I have ever in 10 years interviewed an epidemiologist and not had them say it depends during the course of our interview, because it depends. The problem is that infectious disease usually involves a lot of different moving parts. There are a lot of factors that go into risk. Some of those are quantifiable. Other ones are not quantifiable. And others are value judgments based on the person who's making the assessment. So we would all love to have a simple, like, you know, compute it in and say yes, no, maybe so, but it's always going to be maybe so. It's always going to be, we don't have a magic eight ball for these, unfortunately. It's going to be something where you kind of have to put in the work to think about what different factors play a role in the activity you want to do and what's personally important to you. What, you know, who are you trying to protect or what resources do you have? Because that's going to vary by person as well.
Well, the good news is you've shared with us on the New York Times this list of questions and kind of this interactive scale where we can get a sense of how risky things are. And you start with, okay, what is the thing you're doing and some basic characteristics of it, indoor, outdoor, that kind of thing. What are some of the first few questions we ask about that?
Well, the first question we ask is if it's indoors or outdoors, because indoors tends to be riskier than outdoors. Outdoors is far, the virus disperses far more quickly and easily. If it is indoors, though, it can be far, you know, less risky if it's ventilated. So that's sort of a sub question that gets asked. Then we ask how long you'll be there. And this is fairly linear. You know, if the longer you're there, the more the risk goes up. In terms of doing contact tracing, epidemiologists will use 15 minutes to determine if you've been a quote unquote close contact. We used 1 hour because no one's going to need to use this tool to decide if they can run into Walgreens for 15 minutes. But there might be a difference between a 1 hour spin class versus a 5 hour sports game versus a 2 hour movie. So, you know, it's a good reason to think of it in those terms. We included whether there would be high intensity activity or shouting, because even if you're wearing a mask, if you're shouting or you're breathing really heavily, like a spin class, then you're going to be expelling more droplets, but presumably so will the other people who are around you. So that, you know, plays a role. One thing that I encourage people to realize as we're going through here is that the different components that we sort of, the categories that we divided up are meant to be seen independently. They're not meant to really depend on each other. So it's not that it's cumulative risk. It's here's the risk in this sphere, here's the risk in that sphere, and here's the risk in this sphere over here. How you personally regard those different spheres will vary greatly by person. If you are a young, healthy person, it might be fine for you to do a high risk activity if you're fully vaccinated and you live alone. So it's, you know, that was a confusion I think a lot of people had on how to make sense out of what this is meant to do. It's meant to be a tool and a guide, but not an answer book. It's sort of to help you internalize these questions.
Right. And another important thing to consider, and you were just starting to touch on it there, I think, is, am I reviewing this because of the risk to me personally of getting sick from this disease? Am I thinking of it, my risk of spreading it to someone near me who might be vulnerable? And also, how am I adding to the overall risk level of helping keep this disease alive or helping get rid of it by participating in these activities? There's a lot of different levels there we could be asking ourselves about risk for.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I heard when I was looking at social media in terms of feedback, some people thought that this was overly strict because they said, well, if you're vaccinated, you're definitely not going to die. And that's true. All of the existing vaccines protect 100% against death. They protect nearly 100% against hospitalization and severe disease. So most of the questions on here are not about whether you personally will be at risk of a life-threatening illness, you know, whether you're going to die or be hospitalized. That's not really the question. The question for you is, if you do get a moderate or mild illness, can you afford to take off work and do you have the resources to do that? And then what kind of risk might you pose to other people? So, you know, some of these questions deal with how many people are present at the activity, because the more people present, the more exposures you have, and no vaccine is 100%. It's 100% against death, but not 100% against infection. So even a highly effective vaccine that's 90 or 95% effective, if you're in a place with 500 people, that's, you know, theoretically, if every single one of them, they're not going to be, but if every single one of them was infected with COVID, then you would have a very high likelihood of getting an infection. You'd be fine physically, but you could take that home with you. So it's, you know, there's all these different continuums. And I think it's hard for people to visualize that and think about those because there are so many different moving parts.
We heard from Mary in Madison, who couldn't stay on the line. She wanted to say she's received both shots of COVID vaccine, generally feels good and safe, sat out the 2 weeks since that second dose, but concerned about whether she's protected from the different known variants. And this news may change, of course, but the research looks, Tara, like the vaccines are indeed pretty good against these variants. Are you seeing that?
Yes. I was actually very thrilled to see the news from Pfizer, BioNTech one to yesterday, and I imagine Moderna will be very similar. Basically, all three of the currently authorized vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna, and the Johnson & Johnson one, and even, I believe, the AstraZeneca one, although that one I need to look back at the data to be sure, they definitely all protect 100% against death and severe illness and hospitalization, which is the most important thing that we care about, right? Most of the other stuff can be taken care of. We just don't want to die or end up on a ventilator. The BioNTech Pfizer one yesterday announced that their vaccine was, I think it was approximately 91 to 94% effective against even mild illness with the South African variant. That's fantastic news because the South African variant is the one that has a mutation that allows it to, quote unquote, escape immunity. In other words, it's not as susceptible to the antibodies that are made from a natural infection. And the Brazil variant called P1 has the same that same mutation. So they both have a little bit of immunity escape is what it's called in epidemiological terms. Basically, we were worried that, you know, we knew it would protect against severe illness and death, but would it protect against infections? We know that the Pfizer one will now, as of yesterday. Hopefully that bodes well for the Moderna one, since the platform is very similar. And we'll wait to see the data from Johnson & Johnson. But I was pretty thrilled to see that. So right now, that's great news.
We're talking to science journalist Tara Haley about the ways we can evaluate COVID risk as more and more people get vaccinated. But a lot of people have questions, and maybe you do, at 800-642-1234. Are some people you live with vaccinated, others not? How are you dealing with that, planning to deal with that? Have you figured out some compromises along the way? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with science journalist Tara Haley about how to decide what COVID-19 risks are okay for you and your household, and what to decide to steer clear of. You could join in with your questions, maybe your situation and how you've dealt with it, at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have some vaccinated, some not in your household or extended family? How are you personally managing that? What are you confused about? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Sarah, let's tackle that problem. There are going to be a lot of households now where one person might be vaccinated and through that two-week window afterward and somebody else isn't. Or in the extended family, can we visit together with that vaccinated person? What kind of things should we be considering there?
Basically, you want to think, who is the most vulnerable person who's going to be there? Most of the time, that's probably going to be someone who's unvaccinated, because even if someone, in most cases, and there's one exception I'll get to here in a moment, most cases, everyone who's vaccinated is going to be in good shape. So you want to think, who here is the most vulnerable? And if it's just someone who's unvaccinated, but they're 23 years old and they, you know, they run a marathon and they're doing great, they're working out, I think it's going to be partly a conversation with them. You probably will feel comfortable around them, and I imagine they will too, but I think it's great to open that conversation and say, hey, you know, are you comfortable with us being here, and, you know, making sure everyone's on the same page. One area where it does get a little bit tricky is that there are some groups where, even if they are vaccinated, we don't know what kind of protection they have. And it's very small selection, but they were not included in the trials. So cancer patients who are undergoing any kind of treatment the time, people who have certain autoimmune conditions, people who are taking an immune suppressing medication, such as a biologic for an autoimmune condition, such as psoriatic arthritis, for example. And then people who have HIV, those different groups there, we don't necessarily know how well, organ transplant recipients. So we don't know yet how protected those groups are. I would say if you have someone in your family or household or who's going to be present at the activity who is vaccinated but has one of those conditions, that's something you really need to give some thought to and think, okay, well, who here is not vaccinated and might they pose a risk to that person? Because that's going to be what you're going to be focusing on.
And though that might be a group of people we'd be thinking about even if we'd never heard of COVID, right? I mean, we'd be careful not to expose people with some of those conditions to a flu, right?
Absolutely. Ideally. I mean, those are the most fragile individuals in general in our community. And the data on their protectiveness from different vaccines varies by vaccine. So on the opposite side of that, if you look at kids, you know, kids, for the most part, and this is not across the board, there are some groups that are higher risk than others, but kids are remarkably resilient with this disease. We don't entirely understand why, but thank goodness kids have been, you know, the only group that's been fully spared, except from the more social results. And like I said, there have been some deaths and some cases of multi-system inflammatory syndrome. But if you have kids there, I'd say if the kids are wearing masks and all the adults are vaccinated, it's probably pretty low risk overall. I'll admit I'm a little bit biased because my son had a birthday party with just our family last weekend. So that was all the adults present were vaccinated. And that was the opinion we took. But we also spent most of our time outside in the backyard.
Let's flip things around. One thing I enjoy doing in normal times is going to a music show, often crowded with people, often in poorly ventilated areas. Obviously, I don't want to do that right now. When do you see that kind of activity, what is right now a high risk activity, starting to look safe-ish again?
That one's tough. I have kind of two answers to that. One answer is, I don't think we're going to reach that level of safety, true safety, until all of the kids are vaccinated. And I say all of the kids, I don't mean every single child, obviously, but, you know, a substantial enough number of kids that we're reaching close to that herd immunity threshold, somewhere in the 70 to 90% range. Because as long as there are kids around and kids congregate with one another, so they're already clustering together and they can't be vaccinated, while a disease does not manifest as, as severely in kids, they can get it and they can transmit it. So that means there's still going to be virus circulating in the community in general. And unless you live in a community where everybody who's there, there's virtually no, you have below 5 out of 100,000 cases, say, is considered low by the CDC, and there's no one coming from out of town, then that might be safe. But I think it's going to wait. It's going to be until the kids are vaccinated. That's probably not going to be until next late fall, winter. Now, that said, there are some venues that are considering the quote unquote vaccination passports. And I don't want to open a can of worms because that's probably a whole other show on its own. But if different venues decide to request proof of vaccination, it's possible that some shows could be held with only vaccinated people. And that's going to be a private business decision. It's not going to be something the government is going to have a say in. And I don't know how that might play out, but I know that there are companies considering that.
Now, for people negotiating with family members on those get togethers, and I know we all want to get together with our family, or many of us want to get together with our families. We've got Passover, Easter, lots of holidays coming up. What kind of things should we be thinking about when we plan a get together?
Again, I'm going to think about who is the most vulnerable person who's going to be there. Now, 6 months ago, the most vulnerable person was probably going to be grandma, grandpa, great aunt, you know, whoever the oldest person was. Ideally, those individuals are now vaccinated. So the most vulnerable person might be someone else. If you do have someone who is particularly vulnerable, such as the examples I gave before, or if you have that one person that just does not want to get the vaccine, I would think about a kind of setting where you're going to be able to reduce the risk in the same way that you might have before the vaccine was available. For example, having an outdoor event instead of having it indoors, or having a what I call an indoor-outdoor event. You leave the back door open and you're coming and going. And I would definitely say that everybody would want to be wearing masks. The CDC has already said that people who are all fully vaccinated can gather without masks, which is fully reasonable. But if you have someone who's vulnerable, or if you have someone who's not vaccinated, or you have, 15 kids at the event running around, all the nieces and nephews, then you're probably going to want at least the kids masked up, so that you're thinking about, thinking about where is the source of possible infections and who can those possible viral particles reach. Those, if you imagine it in your head, the actual viral particles moving from a potentially infected person, whether you know they're infected or not, to the most vulnerable person, that can kind of help you think through what you need to do.
Briefly, Tara, I mean, we still have to think even after we get the vaccine, but the good news here is, I think, the vaccine's really moving the needle toward the safe side of the equation in some significant ways. Is that right?
Absolutely. I've talked to people about this vaccine. I've been writing about vaccines for 10 years. And when I first heard that Moderna was beginning their trials in March, I thought, my goodness, I really hope we can get a vaccine that's at least maybe 70% effective. That would be really great. And maybe we could get it within 2 or 3 years. That was my expectation based on all my reporting on vaccines. To get a vaccine in under 10 months, that's 95% effective and completely 100% effective against death, is absolutely phenomenal. And I also am quick to point out to people that sometimes scares them because they say, whoa, it went so fast. Well, part of the reason it went so fast is we had lots of uncontrolled transmission in the United States. So we didn't have to wait long for enough people in the trial to get sick to make those calculations like they usually do.
And we'll leave it there. We have to leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Tara Haley, science and health journalist, author of the book Vaccination Investigation. She joined us with advice on evaluating our COVID risk as vaccinations ramp up.